Good morning, one and all, and welcome back to another day, another week here at the Damage Report. I am John Arola, and she is back where she belongs on Monday. Francesca, how's it going?
Good. Happy Monday, everybody. Excited for more politics?
Everyone? I actually am. There's been some good news recently.
Bull things.
He's going to be in some trouble. Or at the very least, if he's not in trouble.
Who's he? I have no idea who you're talking about.
A guy that we will talk about. But anyway, I'm glad to have you back. It's always great to start the week with Francesca. We were talking the last time you're on about upcoming show of yours. You want to let people know about that before we jump into the serious stuff?
John is a hashtag ally, okay? Yeah, everybody come see me do stand up with my husband, which I say like Melania Trump, my husband, Matt Lieb. He's also a stand up comic. We're gonna be at the Punchline in San Francisco on Tuesday, October 17th. That's right, yeah. It's going up on a nice Tuesday. So yeah, tickets, I think Live Nation, SF Punchline.
Do they do, I'm gonna make myself sound really stupid, so I apologize, but. Do you guys in the comic world, you comics, you comedians, do you guys ever do like tag team shows?
Yeah. Well, you mean like duo acts?
Yeah. Is that a thing in stand-up comedy? I never.
Like since comedy was around, you know, it's been a thing. It's less
like in modern stand-up comedy, is it a thing?
Yeah, but usually they're related. So the duo acts that I know are the Sklar brothers. They're hilarious. They're great. They're twins. They're identical twins. The Putterboss sisters. So it's like brothers and sisters. Putterboss are hilarious. They're from Chicago, I believe, or came up in Chicago. They're wonderful.
What about husband and wife?
Less often, Moshe Kasher, Natasha Leggero they tour together with their Endless Honeymoon tour, but they don't go on, they're not on stage together.
Well, I'm just saying it's untapped territory, perhaps ripe for a fun back and forth dynamic. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, we'll see. I'm gonna try to incept Matt on that and see if he likes it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's all coming up. That's her next tour, so get ready for it. Anyway, thank you all for being here because we do have news that we're gonna be talking about. Not only Donald Trump's multifaceted breakdowns over the weekend, the attempt to pitch the entire issue that he's found himself in as being a free speech thing. We're gonna be responding to that. One of the big super PACs supporting Donald Trump appearing to turn its fire away from Ron DeSantis, which is actually bad news for Ron DeSantis. We've got updates on abortion in Texas. We've got updates on the heat in Texas and a cop trying to shoot a Pomeranian. So, only the most exciting, very typical American news today. And that's all in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, Barbie, wokest movie ever or not? The narrative might be changing, and some bad news for the women's national team and the Women's World Cup, and the vultures be a circling. So lots to look forward to. Before all that, hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live, and you can join in on. They can come and join in the conversation, and perhaps with your messages, you can win yourself the right to a $100 Blue Apron gift card. With all that said, Francesca, are you ready to jump into some news?
Yes.
What about a set where? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God.
We'll talk more about comedy during the break or something. Okay, no, we'll do it in the social break. Okay, let's jump into some actual news. It was really only a matter of time before Donald Trump decided to make his most recent upcoming trial not about him, but about the judge. In this case, Judge Tanya Chutkan. He has an issue with her. He was able to find one. We didn't think he would, but he did. And he says this, it's subtle. And he communicates that with all caps. No way I can get a fair trial or even close to a fair trial in Washington, D.C. There are many reasons for this, but just one is that I am calling for a federal takeover of this filthy and crime-ridden embarrassment to our nation, where murders have just shattered the all-time record. That's not true. They are up, but they were higher in 2003. Other violent crimes have never been worse, except for in earlier years. And tourists have fled. The federal takeover is very unpopular with potential area jurors, but necessary for safety, greatness, and for all the world to see. So can't get a fair trial. And then I'm not gonna read this entire thing, but if you go to the next one, his issue with Chutkan is that she was assigned to the case. So he is questioning that, obviously, to the extent that his mind can question things. He is implying that she was chosen because she is especially hostile to him. She does seem potentially, hypothetically, a little bit hostile to him, but in a federal case like this, the judge is chosen at random, and there's no reason yet to believe that that's not the case here. So he is saying that she has to recuse herself. Why? Well, I don't know, but I do know that he's gonna be asking for it on very powerful grounds. If they're so powerful, I would cite what the grounds are. So he seems to be implying she was chosen, not randomly assigned, and I'm just saying that. But because I'm just saying that, she should have to recuse herself. Oh, and also we don't want it to be in DC because I don't think they like me. Why? Well, maybe because I keep calling their city filthy and crime ridden, and I'm gonna keep doing that, by the way. So this is kind of a big old mess, Francesca, what do you think?
I mean, I don't know how subtle it is or not, but I feel like it has everything to do with the fact that she is a black woman who's also a judge. Like that he, and he's sort of, he's dog whistling. He's saying, I can't get a fair trial in DC, which by the way is dirty and disgusting. Which I think is, again, a dog whistle, a racist dog whistle. There's black people who live in DC. It's a city, so there you go, urban crime and whatnot. And then Chutkin is like, yeah, he's basically saying she's a woman, she's a black woman, this is ridiculous, of course, and she was appointed by Obama. Ergo, like she's gonna have it out for me. Yeah, and that's not how the justice system works. And he's getting, I mean, it's incredible, he's getting a masterclass in how the justice system does work. But no, she wasn't assigned deliberately to him. And she's actually ruled on a lot of these January 6th cases. She arguably knows a lot about what happened on January 6th. And she will be a very good judge of the kinds of consequences that should be implemented. Of course, all of this is going to be, I mean, there's gonna be there's a grand jury that will be recommending, has recommended these charges, and it's not just going to be up to her. So
yeah, 100%. And by the way, like it's so unfair. Woe is me. I got this woman who Obama appointed. You got Eileen Cannon for the classified documents case. So is that balance in his mind? No, that's irrelevant. Forget that. She's gonna be mean to me. As we were saying in a production meeting this morning, like it is like T minus 1 hour until he calls her racist for no reason other than the reason. But anyway, look, as ridiculous as he looks with those messages about the jury and about the location and about the judge, and we'll return to the judge, he doesn't actually look the worst here. That great honor goes to his lawyer, John Lauro, who had a specific idea in mind. We don't do it in DC, no, we do it somewhere else. Somewhere that, quote, reflects the characteristics of the American people. It's up to the judge. I think West Virginia would be an excellent venue to try this case. They're close to DC and a much more diverse place. It's West Virginia. Fine state, bad senator. Fine state, much more diverse. It is 93% white.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying there's not forms of diversity amongst us pale faces, but you know what people mean when they say diverse, and he knows what he means. He wants an area that he thinks is gonna be crazy MAGA. That's all it is. Why would it be in West Virginia? Did he commit the crimes in West Virginia? No. He did it in DC. This is all, it's just so see-through, Francesca.
Yeah, but it's her district. Yeah, there are other judges in the district, but like it's her district, that's why. Like she's overseen, again, a lot of these cases. And it's incredible how the right gets away with saying things like diverse. And in our brains, like we've been alive long enough to when you're young and you like learn about diversity, you think like, oh yeah, you know, in a majority white country, you know, it's important to understand that like, I'm Chinese, hey, you're Indian, you're Mexican, like all, like that's diversity, people of color, black people, brown people, yay, you know, like that's diversity, it always has in my head. So it takes me a moment to kind of like, oh, reframe anything that comes out of a right winger's mouth. When they say the words racist, when they say the words diversity, they're talking about white people not getting enough of the pie. Like they're used to 95% of it. They're used to that 93% of West Virginia, which is much more fair than only, what is it in DC? I don't know, 60%?
In any event,
who knows?
My advice to future people like this is do your coups in West Virginia if that's where you want to be tried for. That's all you have to do. So look, there's a lot of anger to go around. Why is he in particular mad at Shutkin? Well, Chutkin, apologies. Well, she denied his team, his legal team, or I guess are they technically a legal team? I guess they technically went to law school. Anyway, they wanted an extended deadline over the protective order possibility that she threw up just a few days ago. He has 3 hours 49 minutes to respond to this. And why was there an effort by the DOJ to try to get this protective order? Well, have you paid any attention to how any of this goes? He routinely attacks both the people prosecuting him, the judges, their families, witnesses, potential witnesses. It's witness tampering on a level that is so bold, you don't even know what to do with it at a certain point. I will remind you, just a few days ago, before this, he said, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you," which I think is a direct threat of violence from Donald Trump. So anyway, they don't want him leaking stuff. They don't, which he definitely will do. So they're considering this protective order, which, by the way, is not particularly rare. Is it rare in cases where the former president is being indicted? Sure, but that's really more on him than anyone else. And so he's just raging. He's now, I just want to read one part of this because he's also attacking Jack Smith. Again, the threats are just constant at this point. He says Jack Smith and our highly partisan and very corrupt Department of Injustice could have brought this Biden opponent case years ago, but chose to wait and bring it right in the middle of my election. Look, I don't know. I know that you're mad about having to run against Biden again. I get that. But like, he just keeps trying to reframe what the case is about. He's gonna do it later on. But like, it's not just that you're the opponent, man. You could have just lost the election. You could have just bided your time and come back and run again. You didn't have to steal the documents. You didn't have to do a coup. You didn't have to come up with fake electors. You didn't have to do any of that stuff. You could have just gone on Fox News for 4 years and complained about how they stole the election from you, and you would have been perfectly fine and you'd be running again right now and annoying the heck out of all of us. But instead, you decided to do a whole bunch of crimes.
You know, Donald Trump is just a reminder to all of us who use the internet that it is absolutely 100% free to shut the F up. Mm-hmm. You do not have to say a thing. Oh, you didn't like a movie? Shut the F up. Are you being indicted on federal crimes for the third time? Shut the F up. You can always say nothing. And arguably, your career and your reputation, what little of it you have left, will be better off for it. Just shut up. Stop oversharing, you sad, sad man.
Yeah, 100%. If you're online and you just, like Brie Larson existed, you can just shut the hell up. You don't actually have to tweet about it. Like, you don't actually have to do that. Trump's legal team has this hope, or at least they want you to believe that they have this hope, a variety of different hopes, that they're gonna relitigate the actual election and all that. But also specifically, they've gotten on this thing where like they're saying that Mike Pence is gonna be one of their best witnesses and he's gonna help acquit Trump. And I don't know if they've been like watching all of the things that Donald Trump has been doing to Mike Pence, but Mike Pence is saying that Trump's lawyers asked him to, quote, reject votes outright. So doesn't seem like it'd be super helpful to you. Now look, he's saying he has no plans to testify, but if he's ordered to, he will. How merciful of you. And like at the same time that they're saying he's gonna secretly drop the bombshell that saves us, we already know because he announced over the weekend that he was taking contemporaneous notes on what Donald Trump was doing and saying. Mm-hmm. So that's not gonna look good for Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is seemingly like trying to activate challenge mode or something because he's still attacking Mike Pence. He bleated, "Little Mike Pence, a man who was about to be ousted as governor until I came along and made a VP, has gone to the dark side." He says Pence, I never told Pence to put me above the Constitution or that Mike was too honest, which he probably took notes on. He's delusional. And now he wants to show he's a tough guy. I once read a major magazine article on Mike.
Ooh.
It said he was not a very good person. I was surprised, but the article was right. Sad. What the hell is that? He's quoting that he read an article once about a person that didn't like Mike Pence. Years later, he's remembering this article about how Mike Pence was a big meanie. That's a former president of the United States.
This
anyway.
Was his, wait. He was my vice president and I saw him every single day I was in the Oval Office. But one time I read an article that said he was bad. And I believe that article. Like, or did he not go to your office? Did you never meet with Mike Pence? Like, what was this relationship? Like, that I think is fascinating. When Mike finally decides that he wants a bestseller at Hudson News, he's gonna come forward, you know, obviously for the airplane reading that somehow, I don't know why they hawk all these right wingers, but he's gonna come forward and it's gonna be like, yep, I mostly faced a wall in my office. And I read scripture. I read scripture and I didn't touch myself. Ever. You know, like that's what, like, what was he doing? What was Mike Pence doing for 4 years? You know, so it's just so funny that he's like, I once read bro, he was your Veep. What are you talking about?
I know, it's so weird. You ask a great question though. Like, we covered all 4 years of the Trump administration. I'm like trying to think of a thing that Mike Pence did. Can anyone remember a thing that, I know that VPs generally don't do much. It ain't like, you know, Harris is out there tearing up the streets or whatever, but I don't remember anything that Mike Pence did. So I don't know, maybe Mike Pence will be able to finally make us remember him as this star witness. We'll see. Anyway.
Yeah,
with that said, I want to.
That house fly was the biggest thing that ever happened to Mike Pence the entire time he was in office.
Probably. Okay, well, look, I want to do a public service to any MAGA people in the audience. So we need to talk about one particular part of this. Donald Trump has seemingly really convinced himself that if he can just keep asserting that this case is about free speech, that that will somehow have literally any effect on the actual trial. It's a bold strategy. He continues to bleed about it. He's saying that just by the protective order that they're talking about, it's gonna be taking away his First Amendment rights. At one point, he says it's a First Amendment free elections case. You don't get to determine what the case is. You're not the prosecutor, you're not the judge. You're just the guy who did the crimes that they say you did. So anyway, I know that it's gonna be hard for us to get through to MAGA people and get them to understand that this is not about the things he said. And that even if it were, you can't just say anything. So I'm not gonna bother, I'm not gonna be able to win them over. But we do have someone on Fox News. Hey, you like Fox News, consider this.
The problem with the free speech argument is, look, Donald Trump wouldn't be under indictment if he had had 50 or 100 or 1,000 rallies where he simply said, falsely by the way, that the election was stolen or that there was widespread fraud, even though there's no evidence of that. He wouldn't be under indictment if he had just done that. Where they crossed the line was when they had these fake electors gather in state capitals after the secretaries of state and the governors had signed certifications that Biden had won the state. If I can make an analogy, Trey, I can come on your show and say, I'm the real Trey Gowdy. I can run around the streets of New York or South Carolina and say, I'm the real Trey Gowdy. But if I go home and I print out a fake driver's license or a fake birth certificate, and I walk into your bank and I say, I'm Trey Gowdy and I'm here to take out all my money, then I've crossed the line into fraud, into forgery, into maybe an attempted grand larceny. I don't think there was a good faith basis for electors to sign fake certificates or false certificates saying that they were duly elected and duly certified. And I don't think there's a good faith basis for saying to Mike Pence, you should take those certificates rather than the real ones.
I feel like that's pretty easy to understand, that like speech can become part of the crime. You know, if you go to the bank and you're like, hand over all the money or I'll kill you, that's not legal. I just spoke, it was my mouth that did the criming. But again, like, they selectively pretend to not understand that. And at the same time, of course, they have a massive issue with like Hunter Biden talking to people, which again, could be a crime. But that demonstrates that they do sometimes understand that speech can rise to the level of a crime. And even then, again, it's not about the just the talking about it, it's the doing it. They signed the papers, they stormed the Capitol. Francesca, what do you think?
Oh, that dude's never gonna be invited back onto Fox News. Good on him for spelling it out so clearly, the difference between free speech and actually acting on something that could be criminal. You know, and good on Fox for covering it or attempting to instead of just spinning it. But I'm sure they'll just go back to their regularly scheduled spin room and BS about how this has all been politicized. And it's like, I mean, except he did this. And of course, none of it really matters to his base that doesn't even watch Fox News in the first place. But I think there's still a few stragglers who are watching Fox. And again, I can't believe that he's still gonna be their nominee. I think there's gonna be a lot of people who are gonna sit 2024 out on the Republican side. Anyway.
Yeah, probably a nice chunk on the Democratic side as well. But yeah, I think. Again, like it's gonna be 2020 again. It's gonna be the exact same arguments. We know that he doesn't come up with anything new, so just prepare yourself for that. Anyway, apologies, Mike. I just want to do this last thing just because it's fun. I need Schadenfreude to start the week off with. I don't generally like to draw that from what Nancy Pelosi does, but it clearly got under his fifis. So let's start with this next video.
When I wasn't in the courtroom, of course, but when I saw his coming out of his car and this or that, I saw a scared puppy. I didn't see any bravado or confidence or anything like that. He knows the truth that he lost the election and now he's got to face the music.
So look, this is basically what Nancy Pelosi does. She delivers for her donors and then does something funny that mocks right wingers or whatever. And because of the combination of those two things, I don't generally like it. I considered putting this on the rundown for the main show on Friday. Because I was gonna joke that like Donald Trump is gonna be like so mad when he sees it, but knowing that like, come on, he's not watching all of the interviews. He's not gonna know that Nancy Pelosi said that, except he totally did because he bleated about it. And it, look, he responds to it. That's not enough for us to cover this. It gets really dark by the end of this. This is his response. I purposefully didn't comment on Nancy Pelosi's very weird story concerning her husband, but now I can because she said something about me with glee that was really quite vicious. I saw a scared puppy, she said, as she watched me on television, like millions of others that didn't see that. I wasn't scared. Nevertheless, how mean a thing to say. She is a wicked witch whose husband's journey from hell starts and finishes with her. She is a sick and demented psycho who will someday live in hell. She said he was a scared puppy. That's cute. It's insulting. It's condescending, but it's cute. She was talking about them being in hell. The dude is still recovering from a vicious head wound he got from one of your fans, Donald Trump, which of course he knows. He just wants to talk about the fact that one of his acolytes failed in their assassination plot against the Pelosis. And that's what he whips out because she said he looked scared. All the court reporters were saying that he looked scared. He was uncomfortable and all that. It's clear that he is scared about what's gonna happen to him. That was maniacal, Francesca.
Yeah, no, he is so unhinged. I love that every unhinged bleat starts with the deranged, the psycho, as he's like, all caps, I'm going to spell Biden Biden because I tweeted this in like 2 seconds. You know, he's just, he is so on one, right? Like, okay, dude, we need to have the Adderall here. We just, you know, and maybe don't snort it. I know you like it up the, you know, schnozzy, but look. A wise woman once said, you get into a tinkle contest with a skunk, you get the tinkle all over you. That was Nancy Pelosi. And I love this. It looked like a scared little puppy. The most grandma of all insults, which goes to show no one can get to Trump the way a woman can get to Trump. Any woman, if she has a modicum of power, well, that's even worse. But notice the way Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are like, Hillary Clinton said, basket of deplorables. And like you might, it's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about the MAGA base. The nicest thing anyone has ever said about Trump is that he looked like a scared puppy. We like puppies. Puppies are cute. Can you imagine being like, I'll see you in hell. You called me a puppy.
So deranged. Just if we need a reminder of, you know, how far we've descended as a culture. If Bill Clinton had tweeted this, and that's it, he didn't do anything else like Trump but this, that would literally be the only thing you ever thought about him for the rest of your life. If Obama did this, yes, every time someone brought up Obama for the rest of his life, someone would be like, do you remember that tweet he said? That was wild. But for Donald Trump, you didn't even know he sent this, did you? It just blends into all of the other crazy. If your friend from high school posted that on Facebook, you'd be sending messages in the group text like, is he okay? Yeah. But for the former president, it's like, whatever.
Hey, Joe. How come your Justice Department goes after Trump endlessly, yet they cover for your family? Hunter's laptop? Yeah, that was censored. But we know that laptop's real. And it's not just filled with photos of Hunter's drug-fueled debauchery either. Nah, it showed Hunter pocketed millions from foreign partners, cash from Ukrainian and Chinese interests accused of bribery. Your family and their cronies raked in over $17 million from these schemes. And you, Joe, went from being one of the poorest in Congress to a millionaire in the White House. Come on, Joe. All this a coincidence or corruption?
So that ad that you just saw there is coming from MAGA Inc. It's a PAC that supports Donald Trump's presidential bid, but can't directly coordinate with it. These PACs cannot directly coordinate with the candidates. But anyway, they're now attacking Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, because I think Hunter Biden's running as his VP, I think. But anyway, they're doing that despite the fact that up until this point in the election, they've been spending tens of millions of dollars attacking Ron DeSantis. So this attack ad, to the extent that it convinces anyone of anything with its selective cherry picking of quotes and things like that, is potentially bad news for Joe Biden. But isn't it also, Francesca, kind of bad news for Ron DeSantis? Like, he doesn't want the PAC to attack him, but the PAC doesn't think it needs to attack him anymore. That's not good. They're ignoring him now. What do you think?
I know. They're like, at least I was in the news. I didn't have to spend money on that commercial myself. Which, by the way, Trump cannot afford this either. I mean, I don't know how much money he can take from this PAC. Maybe none of it. So, but he really needs it for his legal fees, as do all of his lawyers and his lawyers' lawyers and his lawyers' 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 cat. But like. Honestly, and we're talking about the indictments and really that avoiding jail is the only way, being elected president is the only way Trump can avoid jail. And you're like, how many of us didn't see this coming in 2016? Like, yeah. Truly, Trump was the death of the Republican Party. They said it themselves. It wasn't us saying it. They know it was the death of the Republican Party. And now they have a corrupt, criminal, sociopathic narcissist as their front runner by a long shot. And they've got to bend over backwards to make Biden, your sleepy, supposedly sleepy Biden, look like a crime boss. You know, like, no, yeah. It doesn't work. It doesn't stick to Biden. And it's so funny how, like, oh my God, you want to start talking about your children's corruption? Jared Kushner, how many billions did he receive from the Saudi government after trying to negotiate peace in the Middle East? Good job, buddy. In addition to the PPP loans, don't get me started. But like, I don't know, John. Like, I think this is just bigger than all. It's like they're all gonna fall behind Trump, whether or not he is convicted. If he's behind bars, what else do they have? Like, sit it out.
I agree. Look, you know, there was a shot, and there's still an outside shot. But yeah, at this point, there's gonna be interesting wrinkles and stuff. Like, you know, some of them. If they want the eventual podcast they launch to do well, they can't resign today as candidates. But Yeah, it's just like it's all lining up. Like DeSantis he's Scott Walker, he's Jeb Bush, you know, more annoying honestly than Jeb. You felt bad for Jeb, you don't feel bad for DeSantis. But anyway, we'll see if any of this can stick. Again, like the headline said, Hunter Biden's laptop is real, circle the real. Yeah, but does it prove anything? Like
we circled it.
We circled it, that's true. It said it proves 11 million. Okay, but how about while you're proving it, why don't you prove it? Why don't you actually prove it? That would be something. Maybe you could do that.
It proves he looked really cool smoking probably crack.
We know that part. But okay. Anyway, the rest of it. And if you can prove it, I don't send it to jail. I don't care about Hunter Biden. But you can't.
What if we underlined it? Would that give us more evidence? If we just
underline. Strike through. What about strike through?
No.
Anyway, we only have another minute or so, but I want to have a little bit more fun at Ron DeSantis' expense here. So Ron DeSantis will not be the target of this ad, obviously, which by the way costs $1.9 million. It's going to be on CNN and Fox News and Newsmax or whatever. But DeSantis is out there, and I don't want you to be too worried about him. He's doing these like local events. You can see him here at the Spanky's Livestock Auction in Iowa. Looks like a good turnout for that from that photo of that's narrowly cropped for some. Why is it such a narrow photo? Why don't we zoom out on that a little bit and see? Oh, that's why they zoomed in so much into that narrow slice. That's why they asked. Like there must have been tons of people who are like, can I sit in the front row right there? No. You sit in the fifth row directly behind him. Such a weird choice to make.
I mean, honestly, I'm a stand-up comic and you've never heard of me. I've done a lot of shows like this, guys. All right. You try to get people to sit in the front row. So when you take the photo, it looks like it's full. But some people are like, no, I'm just gonna sit in the back. Cause I heard this was auctioning off Ron DeSantis in something called Spanky's, and I'll take him for $100. What? Is that not why we're here? Oh, okay. I'll just sit here anyway.
By the way, I get those people. I love comedy. I don't want to be close. My nightmare ever since watching The Nutty Professor as a young man is the comic interacting with me in the audience. So I always sit in the back. But so don't ever talk to me if I go to your show, Francesca.
You ever been high at a show that was interactive? Oh my God. Like once I went to like a magician, I saw like a magician who interacted with the audience and I was like too close and I was like, oh no, oh no. And I thought I was gonna lose my mind. Cause you know how you can't interact when you're on weed.
Definitely. The film of that experience is Too Close, Too High. It was a dangerous time. A bit of good news, bad news on the topic of abortion specific to Texas. So we've been tracking this lawsuit that 13 women have filed against the state over their abortion ban. Effectively, that state, like some of the ones who've done their bans, has exceptions for instance, health. You know, if it's medically necessary, you're allowed to get the abortion. But as we've been saying for months now, those mean effectively nothing in practice. They likely will not save you suffering and potentially death. They're designed to make it a little bit more, easy to sell as a concept. We're not heartless. We're not going to let someone actually die, except that they very much are. And so the good news is that a judge ruled on Friday that needs to be stopped, basically. That the at least for now, the doctors who provide abortions for people whose lives or health are in danger will be able to still do that, and they won't have to worry about being thrown in prison. Basically, it broadens and clarifies what existed as a very vague exception in the state's bans. It also temporarily bars state officials until the full case is decided. So all this would be temporary from prosecuting doctors who in their quote good faith judgment and in consultation with the pregnant person determine that an abortion is medically necessary. Now that would seem to be literally the bottom floor of a medical exception. If the doctor and the patient think it's medically necessary, that's what makes it medically necessary. That is not what was allowed under the exception prior to this. And as you'll soon see going forward, we'll still not. But anyway, the judge, Jessica Mangrum, said that the uncertainty regarding the scope of the medical exception and the related threat of enforcement in Texas's abortion bans has created an imminent risk for doctors who will have no choice but to bar or delay the provision of abortion care to women who require, or persons who require, the procedure to prevent death or serious health risks. So that was good. A judge who seems to understand the limitations of the law as written. Unfortunately, the Texas Attorney General's office said later that day that they would appeal the ruling, which for some reason immediately puts the order on hold. Not the actual appeal, but the fact that they're appealing it puts it on hold. And anyway, they're saying that it's an activist Austin judge. And I love that. Activist has always been such an obviously stupid and vapid thing that they throw against a judge who interprets the law in a way that they don't like. But in this case, the judge is just saying, you said you want there to be an exception, Texas GOP. I'm saying there has to be an exception. And to them, that's being an activist judge, which sort of proves the point that we've been saying this whole time. They don't intend those exceptions to actually exist. But Francesca, what do you make of this background?
I mean, absolutely. This is what happens when people who don't have uteruses legislate against people who do. To say nothing of big government, to say nothing of the utmost violation of privacy that these anti-abortion laws are, which, by the way, was the entire precedent upon which Roe v. Wade was established, is our right to privacy, our right to make these decisions between ourselves, our families, and our doctors. And a lot of those decisions are medical decisions, right? As in the case of these women who brought, who in most, I believe in all of the cases, wanted to be parents, wanted to have a healthy pregnancy and have a healthy baby. And because they were denied critical abortion care, they nearly bled out in their cars and they nearly died. So, and this is the question, is how, what is it gonna take? Do you need dead bodies? Do you need them to pile up outside of your door, Attorney General? Like, is that what will convince you? Or no, or most likely it won't, because it is the hypothetical principle of some made up thing that you have in your head or in your stupid little book that you've decided means that a life is a life. And it has no regard for on the ground, pregnant people, what they go through, what it is every single damn day. Like, look, if you want to shadow an like a gynecologist, OBGYN, like if you want to shadow for it 3 years and be like, you know, and just assess, gather some information, then maybe I'll let you legislate, or I will take you seriously when you do try to legislate against people's body. But instead, yeah, this is all, it's all in theory, and in practice people are dying.
Yeah, 100%.
So yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. Again, it's gonna come down to the appeals, but we all know theoretically where this could go. We know the obvious religious zealots that they've packed the Supreme Court with. So, you know, don't get your hopes up necessarily, but there are along the way some bits of good news, albeit brief. Absolutely devastating update on the heat wave that continues to grip a significant portion of the United States. A Texas couple was discovered dead at their home in Baytown near the corpse of their dog. And that's apparently after their air conditioner broke during the heat wave. They had apparently intended to replace it, but didn't have the money initially. And so 4 days without AC in a period of more than 100 degree days, that's what happens in America these days. If you live in an area where your environment has been wrecked, thanks to our decisions, and you can't afford to have AC because of the effect of the economic decisions that we've made, you can simply die in your home. You, your spouse, your pet, just dead. They apparently needed $1,400 to $1,600. They were trying to get a loan, but they didn't get it in time. You know how we talk often about how like a $400 emergency would financially break 40% of families or whatever. This is what that literally looks like in practice. That if you are, you know, unlucky enough that you've been left behind financially, that there's no aid coming, and this is what we've done to our climate, you can just die. And the couple's daughter, Roxana Floods, coming out of, obviously devastated, but says, I would love for something to be set up with these companies to warn people about how lethal this heat is. If they don't have the money to get their air conditioner fixed, to let them know that they're literally staying inside an oven. They are, of course, not the only people that have died in Texas during this heat wave. 7 people just in Harris County actually died from the heat. All of them, their deaths listed as being as a result of hyperthermia. And so we see this every year, but we're seeing it more and more. And in particular in Texas, this is a problem that they have just decided that they are not gonna fix. And if it requires more families like this to die, they're perfectly fine with that. What do you think, Francesca?
I mean, this is why the climate crisis calls into question our system of economy, which is rampant, unfettered, and cruel capitalism, right? And the government takes a backseat to corporations. The government takes a backseat to companies getting as much as they can off of people, no matter what company that is. And then when it gets too spicy for them, a la flood waters in Florida rise, they just bounce, like insurance companies that will no longer insure homes in Florida because rising tides due to climate change. But this is what happens, and there is no corporate, there is no individual solution. This is a governmental problem. It's not, survival of the fittest. I'm sorry that these elderly people died in their homes because they couldn't afford to fix their air conditioner. What kind of God do you worship to say that that is allowed? No, you worship money. That's it. And we're not smart enough, and we're not selfless enough, and we're run by greedy ass mofos to the point where we can be like, we could retrofit our energy grids. We could democratize our energy grids. Air conditioning could be accessible and affordable to everyone. But we will never do that because no one's making a profit off of that. That's just in the short term. In the long run, solar, wind, all kinds of renewables, the ways that we can actually help. In fact, democratizing the energy grid would cut down on fossil fuel emissions because you can generate your own electricity, let's say by solar panels on your home and whatnot. But like, we can't have anything nice. We can't adequately confront this crisis because money. Because capitalism.
100%. Yeah. I mean, even look, obviously, it's expensive to do these renovations, to do solar or something like that. But that's the sort of industry that requires massive subsidies. And there was some provision for helping people with purchasing heat pumps and the climate bill. Obviously, we're going to need way more of that. But
yes.
But then you see again, as you say, the effect of capitalism. I saw recently in California, as you say, democratize the power grid. Like, we want people to be able to be self-sufficient, but also theoretically, we could be helping each other out.
Yes.
When you have solar, you can send energy into the energy grid. They recently redid the regulations where now they compensate you for like 1/3 or 1/4 of what they used to for that, disincentivizing people doing that because the energy companies bought the politicians and the energy companies don't want people producing their own power.
Wild.
So the energy companies are just a weight shackled to our feet, dragging us down as the climate continues to become less hospitable to human life. We're moving in the exact opposite direction. We should be moving faster towards producing our own energy, storing our own energy. But instead, so that these companies can make a little bit more money, we're being wrecked. And we have a great example of that, by the way, in Texas, where again, they have their own separate grid because their politicians have been bought and nobody seems to care. On Sunday, Texas power prices rose. There's a lot of demand, a lot of people in AC. So it's expected that it would rise a little bit. They rose 800%.
My God.
Does that seem sustainable? I get that we're like a lefty show, so Texas conservatives probably aren't watching. If they are, they're appalled by us because they think that we're Satanists. But does this seem like the way that it's supposed to work? The energy companies don't mind, they're getting paid. The politicians don't mind, they get paid from the energy companies. You're the one getting screwed, and it ain't blue city Dem mayors that are doing this. All of your leaders are Republicans. Your governor's a Republican, your AG is a Republican, your senator's a Republican, most of your congressmen are Republicans. So what is this, Obama's fault that all of a sudden you're being totally screwed over on your power? Why don't you have a problem with this?
No, and free, like, for a party that loves freedom and they go on and on and on about it, the fact that you cannot create your own energy source without plugging back into the grid and paying through the nose is ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. And final thought, what if there was a power outage? There's been a power outage in Texas before. We just saw the deep freeze when Ted Cruz flew his ass to Cancun. What if that happens in the middle of this heat wave? You know how many more people are going to die because they don't have AC? There is a role for government to play. The fact that Texas does not have cooling centers in every single city, in every single suburb for people to go to be able to survive this is absolutely ludicrous. And it's an abdication of their responsibility.
100%, yeah. Yeah, the resources should be there. I don't know this couple that died. For all I know, they're like huge MAGA supporters. They would be alive if we gave a damn about what happened to people and if we prioritized it with our legislation. And if we start, I'm glad of the research that Ellen did here. Hurricanes, super dramatic. We focus a ton on hurricanes, and hurricanes can be really damaging. 8 times as many people die from heat in the US every year as hurricanes. But the hurricanes are the exciting thing. The fact that 600 people die just because they effectively are forced to live in ovens is not exciting, I guess, so we don't really focus on it. Totally, every one of those deaths, utterly avoidable, but we choose not to. Okay, yeah. We're gonna move to one more, more specific tragedy. A woman in Arkansas is now suing her local sheriff's office, saying that a deputy that had come to her property fired his gun at her Pomeranian. And as bad as it would have been had he hit the Pomeranian, a different tragedy occurred. He hit her with the bullet because he was so terrified of this vicious attack dog. This is Tina Height, a resident of Columbia County. So she apparently called the sheriff's office because she had an issue with something related to domestic violence. So according to body cam footage, which unfortunately we cannot play for you because it's local news, Brian Williams is a deputy that gets there. He is apparently, they're talking back and forth, the different law enforcement officers, saying that she's got some dogs. So they walk up to the front yard to knock on her door. And Williams stands back while another deputy knocks on the door. The door opens, a couple of dogs walk out on the front porch, and Height explains that they won't bite the deputies, that they're not violent or whatever. So Williams immediately freaks out, shouts, "Get back, get your dog, I'll kill this mother effer." He fires his gun in the air, which is already dangerous and reckless. She begins trying to gather the dogs, probably terrified that she'll be murdered in a second. The Pomeranian escapes and runs towards Williams. He tries to shoot it, hits her. She shouts, "You shot me," begins writhing in pain, telling the deputies to get away from her. She's probably terrified that they'll finish her off, saying she's scared of them. And then, again, we can't show you the video, unfortunately, but you can see a little bit in these shots of the tiny little dog. So then, Williams and the second deputy deny that he shot Height. At one point, he goes back to the patrol car after being asked to call an ambulance. He says, "I shot at the goddamn dog, and I think the dog scratched her. She said I shot her." The dog was apparently charging at him. And I know that he knows that because he was so terrified of the Pomeranian that he tried to murder it. How it would have scratched her, I don't know. And she says the bullet is still in her shin. So I feel like that's kind of proof of what happened. I feel like this is going to be adjudicated. But regardless, like, you show up, you're immediately terrified of the dogs. You don't think to maybe like wait outside of the fence so the dogs can be gathered up. You just immediately begin shooting in the air. And when the Pomeranian, and by the way, I know most people are familiar with Pomeranians, but in case you're not, they can weigh up to 7 pounds, mind you. They are amongst the tiniest, fluffiest, and yes, sometimes aggressive dogs, but they're not gonna tear your foot off at the ankle. It's a Pomeranian. You don't need to shoot it. Francesca, what do you think?
They're not the brightest bulbs in the box, all right? Cops, I'm just gonna say it. All right, that's the nicest thing you're gonna hear me say about cops. And how many instances do we need of them effing up like this right here? And like, let's be real. We need a different force to call when it comes to domestic disputes. Because often they end with someone getting shot. Even if it is the so-called aggressor or abuser or alleged abuser, you don't necessarily want that person to be shot. So, and you definitely don't want your dog to be shot. You definitely don't want to be shot yourself. So when it comes to mental health crisis, when it comes crises, and when it comes to domestic disputes, there needs to be other unarmed or at least not trigger happy forces that can help us, or forces, gosh, I don't know, patrols, community servants, and those sadly are not the police.
This is just, look, they're gonna look into it. They're gonna, you know, decide exactly what happened. They say that they've investigated it and he was cleared. Okay. I feel like if she's got a bullet in her leg, she's probably got a pretty strong case, but we'll see what happens as this case develops. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour. I wish that we had more, but that's it. More to come in the aftermath though, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.